Hello and welcome to Joe Talks Comics. This is the podcast where I talk with friends about the comics we've been really enjoying lately, plus occasional solo episodes and creator interviews. This week we've got another Kickstarter conversation, and those are these bonus episodes at the moment. Again, it's really exciting to talk to all these awesome indie creators. This week I talked to Jeff Huz, I hope I said that right, sorry, about his new Kickstarter, The End of All Terminus, issue 1, a really cool, interesting sci-fi epic series. And yeah, this should be live on Kickstarter as of this episode going out. I can't double check the end date as of recording this intro because it's not live yet, but I believe, from what I remember from the conversation, it should end on April 13th, I think. So yeah, you know, the link for that will be in the description, the show notes as always, the links to like Jeff's Twitter and the Comic Con Twitter and Jeff's podcast that he hosts. So as always, yeah, go support it because it definitely needs your support. I enjoyed the preview of the first issue I read, so worth checking out if you're interested. Because yeah, again, as we sort of talk about in this interview, these indie comics, I need your support and deserve your support because they won't happen without you supporting them. So yeah, I hope you enjoy as always, and I'll see you on the other side. Jeff, sorry, how do you, just getting straight into it, how do you say your last name again? Sorry,
Haas.
Okay, sense that. Yeah, welcome to the podcast. It's good to have you here. You've been really helpful. I know we've been going back and forth on email, trying to get me in contact with other creators that want to promote their own works. But it's fun. I'd say tonight for me at least, recording, that we can help you promote your own series for once.
I'm happy to be here.
Cool. So, to get us started, do you want to introduce yourself and the book you're talking about, The End of All Terminus?
Sure. My name is Jeff Haas. I'm the writer and creator of The End of All Terminus, which is an epic, apocalyptic sci-fi story about the last 7 sentient species in the universe trying to escape from the boundaries of our universe before it's ripped apart by the Great Rip. It's action, there's adventure, like I said, great characters. At least my opinion as the writer, I think the writing's good. And it's now has a notification page that's active on Kickstarter. So if everyone can go to the Kickstarter page, click notify for launch, I would greatly appreciate it. So please go ahead and do so.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when you first reached out to me about it, I didn't really know anything about what it was about. But so it was fun getting to read that preview before we started and to like see the synopsis and like actually start hearing about what it's going to be about, because that name is sort of intriguing and like it has my attention. So yeah, it was fun to actually dive into at least a preview of it, and I'm excited for everyone to hopefully get to check it out and support it. Yeah,
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Like I said, the artist is Brad Shipp. He's a fantastic artist. He's doing, it is black and white at the moment. If we hit a certain stretch goal, we will move it to color, but at the moment we're gonna keep it black and white. But he did a wonderful job with his art, and the letterer, Todd Tashioka, did a great job with his. So yeah, I'm really excited for people to start being able to look at it.
Nice. And so that leads into my first question, or the question I'm going to ask first, is, was the black and white something that was purely like practical then, in terms of not having to like have extra money for a colorist, or just I suppose technically, or was it something you also think about stylistically?
Well, I mean, Brad does a great job with coloring with a gray, so I appreciated that a lot. But there is something to be said for saving some money on a colorist until you make more money on the issue. But I do think he did a great job with the gray tone. So I pretty much decided when I saw it, we can hold off on the colorist for now. I think this it works on its own.
Yeah, I mean, if it's good enough for The Walking Dead, then.
That good point. Yes, I'm not going to say anywhere near the quality of the Walking Dead. But yeah, I think sometimes black and white really does sell it.
That's a lofty comparison for me to make, but it definitely is something interesting with how black and white like conveys and really changes how you experience the story. Because I haven't been reading to go back to The Walking Dead briefly. I haven't been reading the deluxe versions they've been putting out, but it's an interesting idea beyond the sort of like money grab element of it, where sort of like completely recoloring the series that was like famously in black and white. And it's a bit of a tangent, but I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I always enjoyed The Walking Dead. Well, for a while, I enjoyed The Walking Dead. I had a few fits and starts on the series. Bought it for a little while. Found it kind of, it was very entertaining. Got a little redundant. Stopped for a little while. Got sucked back in. But, for a zombie story, the fact that you can make it almost 200 issues is very impressive.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just 200 issues of almost of just like twists and turns and the way he writes the characters. And I've only read the first compendium so far, but I'm excited to dive into more of that when I get a chance.
Yeah, like I said, I started buying it a little bit around, I'm trying to remember the guy with the tiger. I bought around that time for a little while. Then I quit after maybe about 20 issues. But I came back at the end and it wraps up well. So, you know, it's going to be one of those series that people remember for ages.
Yeah, absolutely. So, to pivot back to The End of All Terminus, where did the idea for this series come about? That's something I'm always interested in asking about.
I have no idea.
Fair enough. It's also a valid answer.
Basically, just at some point, I know it happens with writers from time to time, that an idea, or very least a title, pops into your head and kind of just stays there. And I can't even remember if it was a concept first or a title first, but I was working on a different project. It was going to be a one-shot comic book that I was working at the time. Still kind of kicking that one around, but that one kind of pushed to the side. And the idea popped in my head for Terminus, and then it just kind of quickly started, like rapidly, ideas started pumping around it. And, you know, and after a while, within the first day or so, I kind of had the whole series kind of plotted out in my head. So once that happened, I was like, all right, put the other story aside and decided to focus in on this one. I must admit, I'm not sure what was the impetus of the actual concept, but we're also going back maybe about a year or so ago, maybe a year and a half ago. But one way or another, it got stuck in my brain, became kind of like this repeated thing that kept popping, you know, and the story kept telling myself, the characters kept introducing themselves in character. And at some point I decided it had to be written down before I forgot about it. So I decided to sit down and write it.
Nice. Yeah. It's always fun hearing about just how many ideas like some writers have, whatever sort of like skill level and where they are at their career. There's like so many that they have, and there's only like a select percentage of those that we actually see, and the rest are just sort of in like just shelved in a drawer.
I'm sure every writer has a bunch of stories that are sitting around half started that they never got around to finishing. And, you know, like I said, me, like everyone else, has those stories as well that sit around or been plotted. I have story synopsis of them, but every once in a while when one really grabs you, that's when you work on. And Terminus was the one that kind of broke through and kind of demanded to be written.
And it's okay if we don't know the answer to this, but was there anything in particular that made it stick in your mind at all? Or
well, without giving away anything, the ending.
Right.
The ending. Okay. The ending is very interesting. I think it's going to be. It's going to fascinate some people. I think it's going to. It actually kind of does open up maybe more questions that it answers. But the ending is something that stuck in my mind. The visual of the ending stuck in my mind, and I think it's really kind of special.
Yeah. That's cool to hear, because I know when I'm just writing my own novel for fun, there's like certain scenes that I already have in mind that I'm like excited to get to write them, but I have to I'm not quite there yet, so I have to sort of wait and like write some other stuff first. So I can sort of understand that.
Yeah, like I said, the ending, that's one of the first things that really kind of cemented the whole story. And when I knew I could write it, a story like this, I did not want to start on until I knew where it was going, because the ending needs to be worth the journey to get there. And as I was thinking about it, I was kicking around, I was like, this is something kind of interesting. I mean, it's kind of highbrow, the ending, but I think for anyone who's going to join me on this journey, I think it will be exciting. At the very least, it's going to be like a holy crap kind of moment.
Nice. So, is it just the first issue you're kickstarting this time?
Yep. The first issue is being kickstarted. Right now, there's 9 interior pages complete. A cover is the inside cover is all complete. There's actually one more page that's not in the preview that you have that's already complete. But I want to complete. I want to kickstart the last 15 pages, and hopefully, if the Kickstarter goes well, Hopefully the artist, Brad Shipp, can make more money than I'm paying him, which would be nice because I think he deserves it. So part of it would be the whole goal is to pay for the remaining pages and then make sure there's money left over as well to kind of give him a raise for what he has done. And that's part of the goal as well, because I think he deserves more than he was asking for.
Nice. Yeah. So leading on from that, you mentioned the ending. If in an ideal world, if everything goes well, is there like a set number of issues to get to that ending, or is it more of like a wait and see thing? Or
there is definitely a long term. Well, I mean, it's like a an ongoing with a definite set of issues. I don't want to go too much into the exact number of issues. Yeah. I don't scare anybody off. But it's one of those. But the way the story is set up, if it's struggling, I might be able to. You know, I probably will wrap it up in like 15 to 20 issues. If it goes well, I have a definite other storylines I want to get to. But we're not talking 100 issues. We're not talking like 80 issues. But we're talking longer. Technically, like an that would definitely go under ongoing.
Nice. Yeah, it definitely. I think you've used the phrase high concept a bit ago, and that just like the brief synopsis definitely gives that sort of epic sci-fi feel that can hopefully be something that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think the whole part of the book, I mean, there's going to be a lot of action. By the end of the book, by the end of the series, we're probably going to go from about 250,000 crew members to like 8 to 12 crew members by the time it's all over. So there's a lot of them are going to die. And so there's a lot of action and stuff like that. But there's also a lot of ideas that are going to be in the book, a lot of interesting concepts I want to discuss. It's kind of an analysis of different kinds of ideas and cultures and groups and kind of analyzing what they mean and how they would function around each other, and some other concepts about how the strengths and weaknesses in a situation like this, and kind of like an analysis of what these people are. And obviously, I mean, it's an allegory for our society as well, different groups, different ideas. When you read the preview, there's probably a few that pop up as immediate. Others are just kind of like overall types of individuals. There's kind of like the tougher soldier kind of individuals, type of society. There's kind of like, there's the wiser, more patient type individuals. There's the religious individuals. There's there's other concepts in there as well. And the whole idea is to watch them, how they interact with each other, how they combat with each other, because none of them like each other. All these groups are very disparate from one another, and none of them, well, most of them don't get along with one another at all. So part of the fun of the story is going to see how this plays out amongst each other and how they either tolerate each other or are they going to try to kill each other as the story evolves.
Nice. Yeah, it's always interesting when a story has those, like, it has a grand like premise and idea, but then it sort of zooms in, maybe in a sense, to focus on the like character dynamics and relationships, as you talked about. Is there anything what's sort of been like, I guess, trying to balance your like the grand like cosmic setup with the like smaller scale, more intimate like character conflicts?
It's definitely been challenging. That's probably the most challenging part, because the cast is big and the cast is going to continue to grow in size as different storylines present themselves and different characters are needed to tell certain stories. But that being said, I do focus in on a few key individuals who represent their group, their species, and kind of also represent the dynamics a little bit. So like I said, there's for the humans, President Lamar is one of the main characters of the entire book. She's the captain of the ship and the leader of the humans. For the Lorelin, which is like a plant-based species, Salah is the main one I'm focusing on with that character. Thraxis is the primary one of his species, the Gaddakians. And by using those characters as your focal point and kind of being like the template for their group, their species, I can kind of tell some bigger stories and kind of focus in a little bit on ideas and their culture through their eyes while still trying to balance off these other characters that are needed to present the story. So yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a hell of a challenge. I have story breakdowns of these characters, and you know, every once in a while I have to go back a little bit to remember, this character's particular personality here, they have to make sure it works. But that's part of the fun, too, is trying to balance it all together, try to find the human moments where I developed certain characters while still keeping the action and the larger cast involved. But like I said, though, that's the challenge, that's the fun, and that's what's going to keep it fresh, is that I'm not going to just see one, it's not one character throughout the entire series, because who could get boring or tedious after a while. There's a lot going on, a lot of different characters, and over time, hopefully, everyone will find some character that they can latch on to, and ideally, hopefully for them, that character doesn't die at some point before the end is here. But more than likely, yes.
Yeah, it's fun to have a diversified cast like that, and like you still start to have it in the preview alone. What was the process of starting to like develop those characters and like personalities in the first place?
Basically, what I started off with was some basic, very vague concepts. Like I said, I wanted a group that was more warrior, survivor of the fittest based, which turned out to be the Kadadakians. And then I thought to myself, who would be the leader of that group? So Thraxus became started just developing. And as I started writing the character, his personality started moving me in one direction with him. And as his personality moved in that direction, the species itself and my concept of them moved in that same direction. The Acolytes of DeVoe, once again, it started off with the concept of, or an idea of Pius Godal, who is kind of like the religious figurehead of that group. And my view of him, once again, dictated what I do with his group, the Acolytes. The Aurelians centered around Salah. Salah, once again, I saw myself as being wise, patient, an ally, or one of the few allies of different species to the president. And that species kind of started centering around him. The Zorakians, I wanted the idea of they're two clones, Alpha and Beta, and kind of what it would be like to basically have this hierarchy among these two individuals who are virtually identical except for creation date, and kind of seeing how they would be in their arrogance. The Link, basic concept of a kind of one of like a computer-based species. Anyone who, I'm sure there's a lot of different possibilities on who they could be modeled after. Some people may say sort of like a Skynet type group, you know, because they're all computer-based individuals. The Paragon is kind of a secret. I don't go too much into who they are, but who they are, because it is a secret, they got developed as something very quiet, so seemingly very mouse-like in their personality, very introverted. Like I said, and as these characters started developing and I created the main face of each character, like I said, Pius Godal became the face of his group. The Link, which is a hive mind, became the face of his group. And over time, how they were written started dictating how that species was going to play out as the story goes along.
Nice. Yeah, that's interesting. And in regards to their designs by artist B.A. Schiff, is that, did you give much direction on what you sort of wanted to see for the designs, or was it more of just like giving a general idea and letting them do what they wanted with it?
Some of them I had more of a concept visually than others. My main thought, and it's always kind of a belief of mine, is the artist is going to be visually stronger than I am. They're going to be better at design than I am, because their whole life is in visual things. So I trust the artist. However, I did get some basic concepts. The Acolytes of DeVoe, with the character of Pius Godal, even though their names are very similar, so I know it could get confusing. I had a very basic idea of what I wanted him to look like and who he was based off of, without going too detailed. I don't get too political, but who was based off. Salah. I basically came up with a very basic idea of these are plant-based individuals. That, you know, gave us a basic a concept, and he ran with it. He actually came up with a better vision than I had in my head, because he's, you know, better at that. The Zorakians, my main description to him was these are two individuals. They have to look identical. But at the same time, they are, because they are clones, they don't have any reproductive organs. They have to look pretty much nondescript as far as any kind of gender. And they are very pale and actually naked. But so he came with his idea for them. Gedakians, I had in my head like a feline-ish look to them. But he kind of ran with it. He kind of did his own thing, and it looks awesome. The Link is all him completely. Paragon, I kind of gave some ideas, which is I want them to look as easily, they have to be able to function unnoticed by everyone around them, because they are just a type of species that everyone takes for granted. No one really takes them seriously. They're just kind of there. to most species. So they had to look basically like something that is non-threatening, completely non-threatening, kind of very innocent appearance. And I think he did a very good job with that. So that's kind of where they came from. And the humans obviously look like humans because they're, you know.
Nice. Yeah. And so you've talked a lot about the characters and which is also very interesting. But was there anything that inspired or influenced some of these ideas and characters and story here in particular?
Well, the Gitadakians with Thraxis, I'm not gonna lie, there's a huge influence of Klingons in that species, yeah, as far as their behaviors. It's okay. Just how it goes. The Acolytes of Devoe, they are, I kind of borrowed two concepts. One is the play Waiting for Godot, and then there's Edea Pius Godal. And anyone looks at it kind of probably can guess where he came from. His idea, Lorelians, there's a little bit of Ents in there from Lord of the Rings, just, visually, kind of conceptually, a little bit there. Mm-hmm. Zarakians, kind of like a standard alien, pale white alien look to him. The Link, the Link, the whole idea of the Link, is, like I said, it's kind of a Skynet-ish kind of Borg little influence there. A Paragon is kind of my own thing, kind of what I kind of made up for them on my own. And there's obviously everyone's inspired by something. Anyone who says they have a truly original concept is a lying piece of crap. Everyone is inspired by something. Everyone got an idea from something else. So you got Klingons fighting Ents, fighting religious fanatics versus clones versus, it's a lot of fantasy, sci-fi and fantasy that's been plucked from. And kind of stuck together.
Why not? Just as you say, if everybody's borrowing from somewhere, it's always fun to just take these ideas and it's mash them together with your new original cool thing and see where it takes you.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what you have to do.
There's
not really that many truly original concepts probably left out there, and if there are, I apparently wasn't creative enough to come up with it. So you borrow what you know, you borrow aspects of what interests you, and there's nothing wrong with using that as a foundation or for what you're going to build on top of.
Yeah, and were there any particular influences to the story at all, or is it sort of the general popular sci-fi narratives?
There's always some concepts that are in there that I don't even remember that I got them. I got them from them.
They've
been lurking back in my head for who knows how many years. But a lot of it has to do with the idea of apocalyptic stories with the final certain amount of people left. But instead of just being left on the planet, I'm trying to think of the one with Will Smith that came out. I Am Legend. The final survivors. I thought, instead of having a final survivor, let's have a final species. Instead of being on one planet, let's do it in space. Instead of just destroying a planet, let's destroy the universe. I kind of up the scale of kind of a bunch of other concepts that are out there.
Yeah. As we talked about, it's just, and it's also something that's come up in other conversations. It's about as long as you can bring your original stamp to it and to sort of take those ideas and do it in your own way and make it exciting and entertaining, then that's really the main thing, isn't it?
Well, that's the whole idea.
To
write this series and have people not interested in it would definitely be disappointing.
That would be a bummer.
It would be. For sure, the good people who are hopefully paying to for the Kickstarter when it comes out, I want to make a story that people are interested in. At the very least, I want them to be thinking about what I wrote, at the very least be intrigued enough to know where the story's going, but enjoying the hell out of the first issue is a total victory.
Yeah.
And hopefully they do. I think the story is good. I think the characters are good. I think the concept's interesting enough. And there's going to be enough death and slaughter to balance off a lot of the discussions, character development moments. And I'm really going to try to weave in both. So it's an equal balance of the high concept aspects of it and the action destruction side of it.
Nice. So speaking of the Kickstarter, as you mentioned at the start, the pre-launch page is active. And I think you mentioned before in emails that it's going live the first week of March. Is that correct?
The live date was budged to March 14th at 7:00, 7 p.m.
Right, Eastern. Okay.
So hopefully we're going to have a live launch on 7:00 Eastern on March 14th, and it's going to be 30 days long. But up to that point, if you hit click notify, you'll be updated when it goes live. So everyone, like I said, click notify. We need as many followers as humanly possible.
Nice. Yeah. And so what sorts of like reward? I know it's not quite live yet, but what sort of rewards are you thinking of offering when it does go live?
Oh, we got a lot of them. There's going to be, obviously, the PDF, the digital copy. There's the hard copy. There's two variant covers. One's going to be done by Denny Valencia, who's an awesome artist. You know some of his work from like Bigfoot Knows Karate, a bunch of other stuff. There's going to be Chris Michaels doing a mashup cover with his comic book Crit and our comic book Terminus, where they're going to have the two big characters, Threkus on my side. I can't remember who's the one on his side. Arm wrestling on the cover, just kind of like a fun little mashup for them. There's going to be a retail tier, which is they get a big discount on buying multiple. I think it's like 10 copies for like $50 for a retail tier. There's going to be a T-shirt. There's a mug. One of the coolest rewards that I don't know anyone really doing, but we're doing it. Brad Shipp apparently is an expert at making 3D printing, so he's going to make a 3D print of the ship, which is about 6 to 8 inches long, we're going to ship out, and you can buy literally the Terminus, which is really cool. There's a producer level, which is the biggest level, which is like $400, which means you get everything, the mug, the T-shirt, producer credit, the 3D ship, each cover as well, which is pretty cool. He's also doing this other thing, which we've been discussing, is pretty cool, which is like a hard copy etching of the title, which that's to be determined what that exactly is going to be called. That's a Brad Shipp thing, but it looks really cool. So yeah, we got a lot of rewards, tons of them. Oh, and also I'm selling appearances on my podcast for assuming you're selling something that is deemed appropriate. You can come on my show for 20 minutes for I think it's $50. And you can be on the Verse of the Stars podcast. There's like 5 openings for that I'm doing, but it would have to be something appropriate. If it's something really lewd or something that I would consider offensive, just obviously I'm not going to put that on. But for the most part, if you got a comic book, $50, you're guaranteed a spot on the show.
Nice. It's always cool when like a few of those there are just all the standard things you'd expect from a Kickstarter. But then it's always fun when you can offer things that are like unique to yours and just sort of generally cool and gonna entice people to back.
Yeah, I hopefully some people take me up on these offers. To me, I really am excited by the 3D printing, and that's when I probably will end up buying myself from Brad, because I really would want to have one and put it like on my display case, because that just looks badass. I am gonna get myself one of the T-shirts as well, so I'm kind of excited about having that. I'm gonna there's no such thing as a writer who isn't also an egoist on some level. So I'm going to definitely have like my own vanity t-shirt apparently walking around with, because, you know, and the podcast, I'm curious to see if anyone's interested in that. Oh, we're also going to sell ad space, a half page ad as well for the in the issue as well. So if you want to advertise something, if you provide the advertisement, if it's considered appropriate and non-offensive, you can have a half page ad in the comic book as well. Those, I think, 4 spots. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited by the rewards, because I think many of them I want for myself. But like I said, as a writer, we're all pretty vain. So that might be, you know, the bias.
One, before we sort of start to wrap up, one of my final questions is that when talking of Kickstarter creators, there's been a consistent theme about things that are just like beyond actual making the comic itself, that are maybe sort of like challenging and just add more like hassle and tasks to the involvement of making the Kickstarter, like making all that, the graphics and sorting out all the rewards and all the logistics. I know if you're sort of working in PR, I don't know if the like promotion is something that's very already can be at home with you for promoting the Kickstarter, but is there anything that so far has been challenging that you weren't expecting, or just sort of generally not what you expected, or
I have launched several Kickstarters, not launched them personally, but I'm as a publicist for other people, and those people, I mean, we always do good, they always break their records, always done well with them. But I will say the greatest challenge of I think any Kickstarter is fighting the algorithms. You post on a page of like 5,000 people, you're only gonna be seen by like 20 of them, you know. And you don't want to be annoying and post every single day, but you can post in a week and you probably only got viewed by like 100 people to begin with, you know? And just by basic math, maybe 10% of them actually looked at it, maybe half of those are actually going to click on it, that is challenging. The algorithms are brutal. Social media becomes increasingly brutal all the time. Twitter is increasingly hostile towards promotion. Facebook's increasingly hostile towards promotion. Reddit's hostile towards everything. It's difficult. But, you know, it's what I always tell my clients, and what I try to do the same is just keep on promoting, keep on plugging, and you're going to get them in drips and drabs. And hopefully, if you get enough of it, it starts catching on. And maybe Kickstarter will start helping you with your promotion if you do well enough. But just be patient and try not to get worried when things go too slow. There's always a lull. Don't get worried. Don't get too excited if things go really fast. Just as many times I've seen people get a massive first day in campaign, you know, they break their goals all on the first day and they're really excited. This is going to, you know, make $10,000 can be so huge, but then there's a lull. And I've seen the same kind of people who do horribly the first day, but the snowball starts rolling and they start doing really well after that. And you never know which one you're going to be. So don't get too excited. Don't get too discouraged. Find your middle ground, which is just a very calm, patient, wait and see. You'll know when it's over. That's usually my recommendation to anyone who's doing a Kickstarter.
Yeah, because I remember there was a Kickstarter I backed a couple of years ago, maybe. And it only just made its goal by, like, the hair of its teeth. It was, like, hours before it finished. Like, it got funded, like, on the day it was ending, yeah, with like hours to go. So that was incredibly tight. So yeah, I can imagine it must be very stressful.
Oh, it's very stressful. And like I said, the indie community needs to pull together with each other and support each other. And the more support we give to each other, the better everyone does. But at the same time, you know, money's money, and you're looking at food prices going up around here. I'm in the United States, and inflation's crazy. And anyone who gives you $2, you know what? That's just as freaking awesome as anyone gave you $100. That was probably the $2 that they had to give. And you should be appreciative of everyone who does give pledge to you, whether or not it's $1 or $100. Each one probably gave exactly what they could afford. And in this day and age, that's something.
Yeah, exactly. I think it just shows how when people, I suppose, so as I was saying this sentence, it's sort of spiraled out into more general and broad thought, but it's about where if you can, if you only have a certain amount of money, then it is better in theory to like spend it on an indie comic and go support that. I know like everyone wants to read the new Spider-Man. I won't try and be a hypocrite because like I love Spider-Man as well, but it's also really beneficial to try and like support those indie creators and those Kickstarters, because then it's sort of like going to real people that you're supporting rather than just like funneling money into. And again, like, yeah, because I buy those as well, but it's just an interesting point worth making.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, you try not to be bitter about it. You know, you see a creator who's like, you know, like Tom McFarlane does Kickstarters, and he makes like millions of dollars, and you get it because people love his stuff because Spawn is awesome. I buy Spawn as well, but you think to yourself as well, he probably doesn't need your dollars on his Kickstarter. And there's a indie Kickstarter that probably could use your $2, you know? But at the same time, you know, it's their money. Their voice is their money. They can do what they want with it. And like I said, I love Spawn as well, so no knock to Tom McFarlane.
Yeah, and it also makes me think about the, like, big company, big publishers kickstarting things, like the Boom Studios Kickstarters and that sort of thing. I don't know what you thought about that.
Once again, it's one of those things where, once again, I gotta be a little careful of what I say because they may be on my show one day, but what I would say is probably they probably don't need they probably don't need to kickstart their stuff. At the same time, people are giving them money, and if I was Boom and someone was going to give me, I think they just had a recent one for The Expanse that almost broke $1 million. And if someone's going to give me $1 million on a Kickstarter, I guess I'm going to kickstart it. You know, I mean, you can't blame them for wanting the money, and you can't blame an individual for wanting to give it to them. So it is what it is on as far as that goes.
Yeah, I suppose it's about the whole like system, because with maybe like a small person, like a like indie person, that's not going to get the same sort of traction. Whereas when like as a big company, you can offer lots of like really cool rewards and make it all like flashy. And that's not to say that like, indie Kickstarters can't be like flashy, but sort of on like a corporate level. And because you just imagine like trying to get like $1 million worth of sales through the direct market. I don't really see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I guess everyone's going to go the direction of where the money is, and that's totally fine. I always view Kickstarters myself as what's there for the indie people who have a harder road of funding themselves and who may not be in getting diamond previews, who are not going to get the automatic purchase that having a celebrity name or something attached to it will give you. To me, that's direct market. But at the same time, like I said, if people are going to give you the money, I would do it too. In an instant. Like if I was Boom and like I said, someone's going to be $1 million on a Kickstarter and guarantee that $1 million in my hand, I would totally do it, of course. And you know, it is what it is at that point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that makes sense. It's a very sort of layered and complicated discussion for sure.
Yeah. But I would say this, though. If you're someone who is active on Kickstarter, as well as giving your money to the big name companies and stuff like that, find some money somewhere to give it to a indie person. Now, I'm not saying it has to be me, which would be nice. But find someone on the indie circuit that you can give $5 to. Get their PDF, get their regular issue. Maybe, you know, just support someone. So you're helping the indie community, which is often the heart and soul of the industry.
Yeah, because like without that support and that money, these things just won't happen. It's like as simple as that, really, in some ways.
And I mean, once again, I mean, I buy comic books from DC, I buy from Marvel, I buy from Image, same. I buy from Dark Horse, I buy from IDW, I buy all of them. But you know, if something brand new and interesting is going to come out, it's going to be from the indie world. You know, if something original comes out, if something that is truly unique comes out, it's going to be from the indie community. And the indie community will be funded through Kickstarter or Zoop or something like that. But that's where, you know, it's going to come from. So help someone out. You don't know, you might be helping the next McFarlane, the next Neil Gaiman, the next whoever, and they came out of that indie community.
Yeah, exactly. So my final question before we wrap up is there anything that you've had a chance to read lately that you've particularly enjoyed? Or?
Well, there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, I just had one of my clients, Anthony Stokes, who does Intrusive Thoughts. That's a great freaking comic book. That comic book is really, really good. If you want to talk about something unique and a good voice in the industry, his Kickstarter just ended, and it was absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed that quite a bit. I just read Parker Girls from Terry Moore. That was really kind of fascinating from his Abstract Studios. I read Usagi Yojimbo, and I always enjoyed those comic books. They're so entertaining. Saga is really entertaining as well. I recommend that. So yeah, I recommend those are the ones I would recommend reading right now.
Okay. And have you got anything else to say before we wrap up, or maybe just where to find you and your comic online?
I'm just going to repeat for the millionth time. Find my notification page on The End of All Terminus on Kickstarter. Type in, you can even just type in the word Terminus, it'll pop up. Click notify. Even if you're not going to buy something, it still helps fighting the algorithm, and it's always appreciated.
Yeah, do it. It literally takes like 30 seconds, maybe less. So yeah, go and do it, people. Cool. Well, thank you for coming on. I'm glad we could sort this out. It's been fun. It's been a good conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, just have a great rest of your day.
And you as well, sir.
Thanks.
Bye.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Unfortunately, that's all we got time for on this episode. I want to thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and review the show 5 stars wherever you're listening. I would really appreciate it. If you want to keep up to date on new episodes, please subscribe. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you can email the show at joetalkscomics@gmail.com. You can find the podcast on Twitter at joetalkscomics. And finally, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at joelovescomics, where we can continue talking comics. That's all for now, and I hope to see you next time. Bye!